Blog Talk Radio.
On that report, I heard that she had a bruise on her face.
You say that they have taken the other children away from the home. Do you know why the children have been taken away from
them? Abuse and, I think, either neglect or endangerment.
Now she says she running. Don't care where she going. Long as she stay two steps ahead of them monsters. Say she gonna keep running. But them monsters faster than lightning, baby. No, you ain't gonna outrun them. He say he running too. Don't care where he running to. All he know is them monsters can't catch him if he stay on the move. So he keep it moving. But them monsters faster than lightning, baby. They catch you, don't care how fast you moving.
This child does not even have love from her own parents.
Yeah, they didn't have a good relationship. What do you mean? What happened?
How could a mother or grandmother turn their back on their own child? Ralph pretty much ignored Aaliyah. She was like a pain in the butt to him. She was left.
We all want answers. Where this beautiful little girl went missing to?
Was he in trouble?
He's great for family.
Oh, he met his father. He didn't really get to have too much of a relationship with him.
Relationship with his stepdad. At first we got along, but then when he and I got more and more into our addiction, Colton probably thought that good. I tuned out.
Do you think that Colton was upset about this drug and alcohol use? Did he ever confront you or talk to you about these things?
One time, and I lied. That was a bit of a last conversation.
Yeah, they say they running. Care less where they going. But all I know is we gotta bring them home so them monsters can't harm them. Cause I hear it storm. Monsters faster than lightning, baby. They may not have till morning. So let's bring them home. Gotta bring them home. Cause I know ain't no good gonna come looking for them. So let's bring them home. Gotta bring them home. Cause I know ain't nothing good for them out here all alone. So we got to bring them home.
You're listening to Stand Tall Radio.
Well, good evening, everyone, and happy holidays. Tonight is our last night of our series of Let's Bring Them Home for the Holidays, and tonight is our grand finale of families, and also a very special family joining us, as they all are very special. This family I know firsthand have met with Kenny and his wife, and we had lunch together one day. And his father's missing right out of North Carolina, right here out of North Carolina where I'm from, just a couple hours away from here. And we're reporting live from North Carolina, and I want to say hi to Kenny and welcome him to the show tonight. Welcome, Kenny.
Hello. How are you doing tonight?
Good. Welcome back to the show. The last show was pretty explosive. went a little off kilter than what we expected, and we had a guest call in, and I just took her to the hot plate, didn't I?
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, we're just trying to get to the bottom of what happened, so.
Yeah, and that's the main thing, and so, you know, we have to do that. We have to make sure we get to the bottom of what happened and find out who did what and where your father is. That's our main goal, is find out where your dad is. And tonight what I'd like you to do is introduce. I'm sorry, I'm having some technical difficulties and trying to do two things at once, and I'm a blonde. I apologize. One thing I'd like to do is, if you're reading off a flyer, please describe Ken Moeller to us. His age, his description, what he was last wearing.
His age is, he's actually 70.
Oh, okay.
He was born in 1942, so he's 70 years old. 5'5", approximately 200 pounds. Bald, shaved head, you know, which I'm sure, you know, as of right now, he probably wouldn't have access to a razor, so probably red hair, strawberry blonde, something like that, a little gray. But he was last seen with, he would have had a gray T-shirt on and blue jeans and work boots. So,
and when you say work boots, what did they look like?
Just, I believe it, you know, they said they were like mid-high, mid-calf work boots, you know, like, you know, he usually wore like the lower, like a 6-inch tall work boot.
And the color of those?
I don't know.
We're not sure on. Anyway, and if we don't know, we need to be careful and not try to guess.
Yeah.
And where are you from, Kenny?
I'm from Pennsylvania. So
you're quite a distance from us.
Yeah, it's 8 hours for us to get down there. A little over 8 hours till we get down there. So.
And we covered a lot.
The details. You know,
we covered a lot in your dad's case last time.
Yes.
But I think there's a lot more, and I told you I wanted to do a second show. And in discussing this with Wendy, as they call her, there's a lot of things I asked her, and I couldn't get a straight answer out of her. So I told her I already knew that it was a redundant question. Or not a redundant question, but, you know, that I already knew the answer, and I was, you know, just wanted her to answer and be straight with us. So I'm going to ask you some questions because I know you know the answer to them, and maybe that can lead us to other things. And I do want to let the audience know that we, of course, do not want to get tunnel vision. We want to keep our minds open and search all avenues and all clues until we can bring them home, because we're not saying that she's a suspect at all. You know, we're not going to name anybody a suspect. Only the police can name a person a suspect or a person of interest. We are just going to put the facts out there. We're going to put things out there so that the police and everyone else can see what we're finding. And sometimes they can find that themselves through media and through the family and discovery, what we call discovery. And when we're able to see that, then we share that with the police. And I find that very interesting. But you're able to find out, and I truly believe that God reveals that for us sometimes. How are you doing this time of year right now? What's going on with you and your wife, Jessica?
Oh, we're getting through. You know, it's tough. You know, this time of the year and everything. We had 2 weeks ago, I guess it was, we had a Moeller family reunion, you know, which was real tough to
sure.
See all his you know, my dad's brothers and sisters and, you know, all the relatives and stuff, and everybody, you know, being concerned and everything is, you know, it's tough, you know, but, you know, for me, having Jessica keeps me motivated and grounded to, you know, keep moving forward with everything and not, you know, like you said, not get tunnel vision on anything. Just do whatever we can to, you know, try and find out what happened. You know,
right.
Over
eight. Tell me, since we're doing a holiday edition, what I'd like to know is, like, when, as you were growing up with your dad, can you tell us some special times that you had with your dad during the holidays?
Well, you know, I mean, we had a lot of, you know, special little things that were just, our own little deals, you know. I mean, I remember, you know, right after, you know, like my 12th birthday. Here's a shotgun. You know, we can go hunting now and stuff. This is yours. You know, which was, at the time, to me, it was really great. But then to find out, you know, that it was a shotgun that was handed down to him, you know, kind of.
Wow.
You know, just little special stuff like that that, you know, I still have.
Kind of like your dad looking at you like a man now. I thought
yeah.
you were his little man.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, we did just a lot of different stuff that he worked a lot. You know,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, I never seemed to think anything different about it, but because I would go to work with him. You know, we'd go off work on trucks, do different stuff, you know, and that was just me and him time. So it didn't matter really, you know, what we were doing. We just, you know, did stuff like that. And, you know, when I was younger, we had six-wheelers, stuff like that. You know, we did that as a me and him thing with, you know, a group of people, but we'd go spend a weekend up in the mountains, you know, running around on these all-terrain vehicles. You know, just go spend our time together doing that kind of stuff. There's always different activities like that that we did, you know, and stuff like
and
that.
As an adult, when you went through school and you got to be an adult, what were some of the special things that you've done with your dad?
We went racing motorcycles. I raced motorcycles for a long time, up until, you know, 2006.
Wow.
Motorcycles, worked on teams, you know, doing motorcycles, racing all over the country, and, you know, he knew that was my passion, so we did that a lot together, and, you know, when I was doing it as a career, you know, we would get together special, you know, when we got close to where he was, or, you know, Hagerstown, Maryland's close to here, you know, was the closest that we really got to home, and, you know, they'd come down and see me and, you know, just do stuff like that, you know, but he knew that was something I did, so he did everything he could to support me in, you know, achieving that as a racer or, you know, as, like I said, when I did it as a, you know, as a mechanic for somebody else, you know, he knew, guided me and, you know, taught me a lot about stuff growing up to make me be able to do that as a living. And, you know, that's just...
special. And one thing about your dad, and we have to say this tonight, is because veterans and our military are very near and dear to my heart, is your dad served in the U.S. Army, and he's a veteran from 1961 to 1964.
Yes.
Before I was born. I will say that was before I was born. But he's one of our veterans, and we need to honor that. And did he ever share with you about his time in the military?
Not really. You know, we didn't. I'd ask him some questions and stuff, you know, and I got some pictures and stuff like that of him, you know, what he did and everything. But, you know, we never really, he would answer my questions and stuff. It wasn't something that he was like, you know, he was proud of it, absolutely. But, you know, did he try and, you know, he was kind of modest about it. You know,
and was that during the Vietnam War?
Yeah.
Right. And you know, we know a lot of our Vietnam War veterans don't talk about their experience during their military career. We know that they were told to go home, shut up about it, and move on with their lives. So that's probably why Dad didn't talk to you. And my dad went through this, through the Vietnam War era too. I think a lot of us at this age that's our fathers and our mothers, mostly our fathers, were Vietnam War era. So I get that, and I think a lot of our listening audience get that too tonight. So you're talking about racing earlier, but you have somebody else in your family in your very close family that's also a racer, don't you?
Yes, you know.
Yeah, she's pretty near and dear to you, isn't she?
Yeah.
She is to me too. She's a sweetheart. What's her name?
Jessica. You know.
Yeah.
Races, and that's, you know, our thing to do together. You know,
this chick gets behind the wheel and lets it rip, people. She says wife races, what do you call them, the funny cars?
Micro sprint.
Yeah, his wife. I love it. Boy, that girl's a toughie. She gets out there and races, she has a Facebook, and you can see her in her car, and I was like, wow, check her out. That's amazing. So you have a very active life and a very fulfilling life. And, you know, I slipped onto your dad's Facebook, which he has a Facebook. And I saw the day that he said he was going to see you guys for your wedding. Can you tell us a little bit about when your dad showed up for your guys' wedding? And he said that, you know, he seemed really fond of Jessica. Seems really fond of Jessica.
Yes. Yeah, it was, you know, they showed up a few days early and helped us. You know, we had a simple wedding. You know, we didn't want to, you know, did everything at one place, got married and had all our friends there. And, you know, he really, you know, helped us get everything set up and coordinate moving tables and everything, you know, it really went off, you know, and we had a few hiccups when we were getting stuff set up and everything like that, and, oh, let's run out and get this and do that, and, you know, because he knew how important it was to me, and, you know, it was equally important to him to see
right.
Everything went off.
And tell us about Jessica. Tell us about why you're so fond of her. Because I met with you and Jessica, and you could just see the love between you and Jessica. And I think Jessica's kind of been your rock through this whole thing, hasn't she?
Yeah. You know, I mean, she absolutely is. And, you know, for me, basically what we're doing right now is, you know, drives me crazy. You know, sitting around waiting, you know, we're, you know, like you said, we're active. We don't, you know, I guess react to a situation. We're, you know, we're active in it, doing it. And, you know, to me, to have to sit around and, you know, let, you know, which is what we have to do, let the law enforcement do their thing and everything, you know, because with, you know, where we're at right now in this, you know, whole deal, there's to go search and everything like that is, you know, we're pretty much exhausted all that stuff as far as we can come up with, and to sit around and you know, not be doing something is hard for me to do, you know.
Sure, and you and I talked about that, and the one thing that I advised you to do with all this is that you're going to have to be active and keep active, and I know that it was very difficult for you, but I got to say that I admire your strength and I admire what you're doing, because it's been a tough, long haul for you. It's been a tough, long haul for you. And I know that you have a lot of friends out there that have been standing right behind you, like Stephen and other people that have just been pulling for you, because you've also been attacked by other people that should be supporting you and helping you through this. But as we see in several families, sometimes families fall apart, and you've been attacked by other people, and we're not going to name names or anything, but how does that make you feel as being your dad's son, and us not being able to find him so far, and to have someone attack you that's supposed to love him too? How does that feel?
Well, it's you know, it's a horrible feeling, you know, thinking that you know, here you got somebody that, you know, he loved and cared about and stuff like that, and, you know, then the tables flipped right here, and, you know, it's just, well, you should have did this or that, and, you know, I mean, it's, you know, this is not the time to, you know, in my opinion, to worry about that kind of stuff. You know, there's, you know, and I told, you know, people a long time, you know, as soon as this happened, that, you know, I told Penley, the investigators, anybody down, you know, involved, that, you know, I'm not here to make friends, but, you know, if to be attacked under this situation is not what I intended for either, you know. I mean, I don't want to talk bad about people, because this is, you know, it's not, you know, really, that is counterproductive to what, you know, what we're trying to do.
Right, and what we need to do is focus the energy on finding your father and bond together and be supportive and put the energy towards all this anger and all this frustration, put it towards something positive into finding your father, as opposed to attacking people, especially with those people being near where he went missing.
Yeah.
And that would make it, you know, in order to that let those things, you know, if those people that are so angry about him being missing, as everyone's angry and frustrated that this wonderful, genuine man is missing, take that anger and that frustration that they're feeling and turn that into a positive, focused thing, and go out there and put that energy towards something positive and help find him. Go put some flyers out. Go let people know that he's missing. Get the word out there. Don't, you know, don't attack people. Let them, you know, go out there and be positive. And if you're a Christian and you belong to a church, that's not God's way. God doesn't want you to be that way. You know, and it just confused me when I saw this, and I was dumbfounded. I was in awe, and I couldn't believe that people that are claim to be pastors of churches and other things like that were attacking a family of a missing person. I was disgusted, to be quite frank with you. Disgusted. And if this church would pull together and help support the efforts in finding your dad, and, you know, get together and put a search team together, get together and put flyers together and start, you know, putting them out there and pulling together and praying and doing things in order to put a good effort out there to find your dad, that's what's going to find him. People tearing each other apart is not going to find him. That just pulls people apart and makes people even more hurt than what they are already. And Okay, I'm off my soapbox. I just had to say that in case they're listening out there. I just had to say something. Because from the last time we were on the air, this has happened to you, and I've tended to be a little protective over you and Jessica, haven't I?
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, it's...
I just love you guys so much, and I'll tell you guys, everybody listening tonight, I met with Kenny and Jessica. They came out here, and we went down, we had lunch together, and I was severely worried about them working with law enforcement, as they were, and, you know, I was worried that law enforcement was going to have issues with them, because sometimes, as you've heard in our last few families working with law enforcement, it's been a huge issue. But Kenny, when you walked in to work with law enforcement, that wasn't the case. We've had a wonderful response with law enforcement, haven't we?
Yes. You know, I mean, them guys have been, you know, I talk to them, you know, sometimes two or three times a week. You know, and I mean, when we were down in North Carolina searching, you know, anything that we came up with for an idea, you know, right at his work, there's a pumping station for the, and there's big manholes in there, you know, and I build, you know, where I work, we build manholes, I know what a manhole looks like when it's brand new. What's, you know, down inside here, I have no idea if that's normal or not normal or what could be down in there, you know. And I brought it to them, you know, I asked them if they had anybody look in there and everything, and that same day it was drained.
Wow.
They had the city come out and drain the pumping station, cleared the manhole so that it was off our list. You know, and everything that I've brought to them this week, I've asked them questions, and, you know, I know, you know, some of the stuff I ask them on Wednesday, I had answers for on Thursday. Other things they're, you know, they need to look into. But
and who do you call to? Because, you know, that's one thing I always do is if, one way or another, if law enforcement's doing a great job, I always want to let people know who's doing a good job. Who's working with you on this case?
You know, I talked to Investigator Penley at the Catawba County Sheriff's Office. And, you know, you have him and Sergeant Schrantz. You know, they're the two lead investigators on this case. You know, this is... You know, that's their main goal right now is working on this thing. And, you know, I said, I mean, I know this week, even this week, you know, they did some serious investigation following up on leads. They had three different interviews with people of interest in three different counties, you know. And
I mean, they are really, because I remember speaking to him myself, and he says it just ain't right that a 70-year-old man goes missing from my town and there's no leads. And they're not looking at him as being missing. They have actually classified him as being abducted from his job. So this is not just a missing case. Your dad was abducted.
You know, and just the time that we spent talking to them and, you know, dealing with them in person and down there and going and sitting down and talking with them, bringing them different ideas and everything, you know, it just, you can kind of, as, you know, I mean, I spent 3 weeks down there and, you know, went and seen them, you know, and it's, you kind of get an idea of how people are, and it's just, you know, it's, in my opinion, it seems like it personally offends them that this, it happened in their county.
Oh, and they're very insulted by whoever did this in their county. That's the feeling I get, that they're very insulted that someone would do this in their county, that they would hurt one of their citizens. Very insulted.
And
to think when they find the person, I wouldn't mess with Investigator Finley. They're very upset that someone hurt one of his citizens.
You can get the idea of dealing with people, you know, on different, you know, I've dealt with people on many different levels and, you know, different aspects of my life. And, you know, some people are, you know, but this is, you know, it personally offends them that, you know, people think they can get away with this in their county.
Oh, yeah.
It bothers them. And, you know, when you talk to them, you know, I talked to them like 2 weeks ago. They were kind of like at a stale, maybe 3 weeks ago. It was kind of stale, you know, and it's like, well, and then, you know, like I said, the last 2 weeks it's been, you know, they've been bombarded with different tips and stuff for this case. And, you know, that kind of, you know, gives them, kind of perk them right up again, you know, that, hey, we got something, you know, we're going to do something. And, you know, to me, that's, you know, very encouraging to know that, you know, I don't need to be sitting down there on the porch step every morning, you know, asking them what they're doing and, you know, do they need coffee so they can, you know, I don't need to motivate them. And
no,
to, you know, to keep going on this case because, you know, like I said, it just they've been great as far as I'm concerned. They've been great at answering questions, and you know, if you ask them something, you know, like I said the whole time I was down there, if you ask them something, they gave you answers. You know, they gave me answers. You know, if they had to check something out, I got a hold of them. Next time I talked to them, you know, they gave me the answer to the question. So, you know, I mean, that's just been a great feeling for me in the fact that I have that. And, you know, that's the only reason that I can continue to, you know.
Let me ask you this, Kenny, because since your dad's gone, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So, you know, that's just, I mean, that's the only, you know, out of this whole thing, that's the comfort that lets me be able to sleep at night and, you know, having family and stuff is great. And, you know, knowing that you have guys like that looking into it, you know, being 8 hours away, you know, that, you know, is an awesome feeling.
And you've heard nightmares of other stories. Since you come into what I call the missing world and met many families, and you have, I've seen that you've met many families of missing, and you've heard the nightmares of how they have to fight with law enforcement and try to get them to even go out and look for their missing loved one, and they have leads on where their loved one most likely is, and then they're so frustrated and so hurt that they feel like law enforcement don't care. You, on the other hand, are very blessed. And so I want to give kudos to Investigator Pinsley tonight and to Sergeant, how do you say his last name? I can never get it right.
Sergeant Strontz.
Strontz. See, that's why I can't get it right. It's different. And they're out of, which town are they? Are they out of Hickory or are they out of Newton town? Or city?
They're out of Newton. Their office is in Newton.
And this is in the same area, but not the same town that Zara Baker went missing, correct?
I believe so, yeah.
And little Zara Baker was the little girl that was an amputee, and she went missing, I believe, in 2010. And they found her, they found parts of her later, but they do. They become very offended over something happening in their county, and we can't say that all over the country, but we're very blessed to have them. On that note, one of the things I wanted to do in the beginning of the show is yell out to my search team out in Orlando, Florida. We had a search for Michelle Baker yesterday, Michelle Parker yesterday, and we had a search team out for her, and we were not able to find her, but we were able to find a detective's wallet and badge and everything else from Tyler, Texas, of all places, so he will be getting his badge back. And we do have more searches planned, and it is a pleasure to work with her family. And her dad was pleased to have the group out there. And if you'd like to volunteer to search in Orlando, Florida, they can use the searchers. And just get a hold of Kim, K-I-M, at ppprecovery.org, and come out and volunteer for the family and help us to look for her. And do you have any searches planned to go out and look for your father?
As of right now, no. You know, with everything that we feel happened there, you know, I wouldn't know, you know, that's what I mean. It's kind of, where do we go?
We don't really have a search area, correct?
You know, I mean, talking to everybody, you know, and, you know, like one of the things that you said and stuff is, you know, if they did something to him there, you know, it's going to be within a few miles, you know, and with that area of the sawmill and everything that, you know, that was going on there, if they put him in a vehicle and got to the hard road, you know, that hard road that's leading out of there, you know, we searched that for, you know, I mean, for 3 weeks we were up and down that road and
right.
Everywhere around the sawmill and the surrounding properties, you know.
Well, let's back up and we'll get into that part, but there's a lot of new people listening to our show tonight that, and we have Stand Tall Radio with us as well. And there's a lot of veterans out there listening to our show tonight and active duty military. And they're pretty upset that one of our veterans has gone missing and has been abducted from his job. And so I want people to know his whole story. So I want to lead through his whole story, what happened to him. So tell us the day that he went missing. Tell us about what happened. Let's start the morning that he went missing, if you know what happened that morning, or lead us up until he went, right before he went missing.
You know, basically, what we had as far as, you know, what really happened that day, he hasn't been up till this point during the week, you know, he was a maintenance man at a sawmill, and up until this week, you know, this point in the week, he hadn't worked. You know, they were slow, and not a lot of, they weren't working every day, and everything. So he was off work. He, you know, his normal thing was night shift maintenance. And around 4 o'clock on Thursday, the August 16th, he got a call from the plant manager that they had a water leak going on. And, you know, it was a kind of a, you know, he knew exactly where it was because it was something that they were going to get to. But I guess the pipe broke. And, you know, so he was called into work, got ready, went to work, picked his paycheck up, you know, at the office there and everything, and proceeded to go about his repairing the water leak.
Well, and one of the things I want to do, because there's still some things out there, there's articles out there that people are saying that he may have walked into a robbery or, you know, other things like that. And we pretty much threw that out of the water in the last episode that we did together, because he walked up to the man that's in the weigh station and collected his check, and the weigh station's right there on the property. So if anyone had been on the property, to steal from the property, would the guy in the weigh station have seen anything going on there?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's the scale house is right off of the driveway. You know, I mean, you wouldn't have had to drive right by the scale house, but where it is, you would have seen stuff going on, and the one other worker was there. That runs around on the equipment and moves logs and, you know, cleans up around the place, with all the equipment and everything. And he was there. So, you know, if he would have, you know, somebody else would have been there. I mean, there's, you know, two other guys there on the property, and there's another business right beside it. And, you know, this time of the day, that wouldn't have really... You know.
And at what time did he show up to his job that day, Kenny?
He got to work approximately 20 after 4, you know, in the afternoon. So, you know, I mean, it was daylight out, you know, when he went missing. The last known contact that we can account for, it was still daylight out.
Right. And what time did he pick up his check?
He got there, picked his check up around 20 after 4, you know, and I guess talked with them, and then, you know, went out to take care of his job, you know. So, you know, but that was, you know, he would have been there about 20 after 4. So, which, you know, if he got a call and got ready, you know, 10, 15 minutes down the road to work, would have put him right there, you know, at that time. So,
and he lived approximately 10 minutes to 15 minutes away from work, right?
Yeah.
And that's very important as you guys listen to our show tonight. And I'm putting up our timeline in the chat room so you guys can check out exactly what has happened here. Okay, so he gets called in to come in and fix a water leak. He shows up at work around 4:20. He goes to the scale house, and he receives his check from the guy in the scale house. And the guy in the scale house, what's his name?
Robin.
So we're just going to give the first name, Robin.
Yep.
Works in the scale house.
So.
Okay, yeah. And then who's the one that called him into work?
It would have been Arthur. That was the plant manager.
And where was Arthur during the time?
He was en route to Florida. So, they left him know that there was an issue back to, you know, at the sawmill. And then he got a hold of my dad to have him go down and fix it. So,
And one of the big beefs was on the last show that they wondered why they didn't call in a day shift to come and fix the water leak. And why would you think that didn't happen?
If they, you know, they weren't running production that day and everything, and, you know, if day shift would have been there, they would have taken, you know, in my opinion, they would have had them taken care of it. But, with the situation that it was, I mean, you know, if you got somebody that lives 10 minutes away versus someone
right.
that lives further away, you know, and, you know, so that's why I would assume that they called my dad in, you know. I mean, you know, he was basically right up the road. And, you know, like I said, they weren't doing production. So, you know, and nobody else really around as far as, you know, the regular workers. So, you know, that's...
Okay, and now
to me, it's common, you know, kind of, you know, you got somebody that lives that close, and they know what they're doing.
Oh, and then because if it's a water leak, you don't want things getting ruined. You want somebody on it right away, and your dad lives 10 minutes from there, so it's kind of an emergency to get it fixed instead of calling someone from a long way away.
You know, he was the maintenance supervisor, so you know.
So he was the boss man.
Yeah, you know, you can call him, hey, we got a water leak here, you know it's going to be taken care of, you know, and everything like that, so,
Well, let's get, okay, so we knew that was going to be taken care of because he was only 10 minutes away. Let's get a water leak taken care of because there's water going everywhere. And so Arthur calls him to come in, and he shows up around 4:20. But let's back up. What was he doing at home before he shows up or before he gets called in, according to Wendy?
Yeah, he was getting supper ready. So they were having he was cooking dinner, you know, and then doing some stuff around the house, so he was, you know, sort of just kind of hanging out, doing his, you know, stuff there at the house, just getting to make sure that the dinner was ready and everything, so that you know, they could have their meal when they got home.
So he was getting supper ready, so he had not eaten before he left for work. He was preparing it and then got the call and left.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we know that. So was Wendy at home when he got the call? Did she know that he was going to work?
I guess she got there right as he got the call, or you know, she was just getting home from work.
And that's his wife.
Yeah. Yep. You know, so she was at work during the day, and then, you know, I don't know if she was home when he got the call or right after he got the call, she came home, you know, but he left.
But didn't he call her to tell her to do something with the green beans?
I guess he got a hold of her earlier before, about turning the crock pot off, you know, during the day, you know, to see if, you know, he should turn the crock pot down or off or something, you know, before she got home from work. So
that wasn't while he went to work, because that's the way it was explained the last show.
After he was at work, he called to see, you know, I guess he figured she ate dinner and wanted to see how it was.
We want to go in this timeline and work it down the timeline, okay? So when was, okay, so at 4:20 he shows up to work. Did he immediately start working on the water line?
As far, he got his paycheck and everything, and Robin and Bud were there. One other coworker.
That's who?
Bud, that's the guy's name. He was another older guy that ran around there all the time, moving stuff around with the equipment they kind of looked after everything there outside of the plant, you know, as far as the logs and everything were concerned.
Okay. All right. So he got his paycheck. He goes in and did Bud and Robin normally stay there longer, or how long was their time schedule?
When we were down there, looking and stuff, normally about 4:30 they were out of there, you know. So I figure their day at this, they were pretty much ready to get out of there when he got his paycheck. Pretty much would have put him, you know, once he started work, and he was by himself.
And did they question Robin to see what time he left that day?
I'm sure they did. You know, I didn't get a definite answer from him. You know, of he said, you know, he clocked out at this time or whatever. But you know, I know the investigators talked to, you know, all the employees, you know, at the sawmill and everything to see if there was anybody that had any kind of, you know, disagreement or beef against my dad. You know, so I you know, I'm sure. You know, they talked to Arthur and, you know, and Robin.
But they all got along with your dad really well, didn't they?
Yeah, you know.
They were like the old guys that hung out at the sawmill and got along really well.
You know.
Did you meet Robin when you went there?
Yeah, yeah. Me see.
And tell me about Robin. If you were to look at him physically, tell me about him.
Yeah, he's kind of a tall, to me, I don't know how you were, you know, like a, my impression is, you know, if you think of like a military guy, kind of in shape, taller, you know.
How old is he?
I guess probably 40, you know, close to my age, you know, I would guess.
Did he seem nice, or what did he seem like when he talked to you?
You know, kind of, you know, he was helpful, you know, and, you know, you could tell he was definitely concerned about what was going on, you know, so, you know, that's, you know, with you know, talking to him and stuff, you know, he offered, you know, if there's anything that he could answer or do for us, you know, anything like that, you know, he seemed to...
He really cared. He was really genuinely concerned about your father, it seems.
Yeah. You know.
Okay. So when was the next... Now we're going to go into the phone calls. You have your timeline. And...
Yep.
What happened next? Did someone receive it? What happened around? Tell us what happened next.
As far as what we got, you know, around 5:30, my dad called Wendy, see how dinner was, to make sure, you know, Lily was picked up, taken care of, you know, stuff like that. You know, just kind of checking in, you know, I guess. What you would say, yeah, and, you know, just, you know.
Okay.
I guess.
And then what happened after that? Let's go through your timeline, and then we're going to go back through, and I want to go through certain things in the timeline, and I'm putting it right up on the screen right now, so if we can hold everything in the chat, I want to just put everything on the timeline right in chat real quick. And then we'll go back through it, and I want to show people something as they look at it on the screen tonight. So at 5:50, he calls Wendy to see how dinner was and see how Lily was, et cetera, et cetera. What happens next?
I guess, you know, repaired a leak, and about 7:30, he texts Wendy, said the repairs were done, waiting for the glue to dry. I'd be home in about an hour.
Repairs are done. Now, this is interesting. Then, I'm going to just kind of put it, you know, I'm just kind of putting it down. Okay, 7:30, repairs are done, be home in an hour, then what?
8:05. He called Arthur and let him know that the leak was fixed, and he was done with the job. So, and that is the last known contact that we have, you know.
Oh, let me replace that, folks. Sorry about that. So, 8:05. And now, did Arthur also say that he was getting ready to leave or anything like that, or we just know that he said he was done with the job?
Yeah, he told him that it was done, and, you know, as far as I know, talking to Arthur and everything, there was, as far as he was concerned, he was finished for the day.
So that means he was getting ready to leave. Okay, let's keep going on your timeline, because there's more to what you have that you've shared with me. Because I want people to look at this, and then we're going to go back through and dissect this thing, okay? And I want people to see if they notice things after we keep going. Okay, go ahead.
9 o'clock, Wendy texted my dad, see where he was, and he did not answer. And then, we have 10:15, 10:30, somewhere in there. She texted my dad again, no answer, and then went to bed.
So between 10:15 and 10:30. Right. Am I correct?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Text again, no answer, and she goes to bed. And she lives how far from there?
10-15 minutes.
Okay. And she goes to bed. And this is what she... And how did you get this timeline? Where did you get this from?
Just, sitting down talking to everybody.
Okay.
Going through everything, as we were going through, as the days went, we talked to some people and got the idea to as things
are
coming along, let's start putting a timeline together so we can. And try and make sense of it.
Right. Okay, so there's still more. Go ahead and tell us what happened.
The next morning.
Uh-huh.
Is where we go to the next morning. And about 7 o'clock when you got.
And what day is that, honey?
This is Friday morning.
17th. And the date?
August 17th.
Okay.
Wendy, around 7 o'clock, I guess, Wendy got up and texted my dad since he wasn't home yet and got no answer, and got Lily ready, took her to daycare, dropped her off at daycare. And what we got in the last radio show is that after she dropped her off at daycare, she came home and tried to have her dad get a hold of my dad, and no answer. And then she went shopping. So.
And then she goes shopping.
Yep.
Now, she stated that she got a hold of them down there, and they said that they saw her truck. Did anyone verify that she called them?
I know. They had said that she had called in there around 8 o'clock, which one of the other things I got off of the last radio show was that when she went to call in, she had to go over to the house and get the number for his work out of her other phone,
Okay, and then there's still more, because I want everyone to see this timeline as we're doing this in the chat room. Keep going. There's still more. She went shopping, and then what time does she show up at? What happened? And remind everybody, this started at 4:20, the day earlier. He has not eaten any food because he left dinner at home because he was just running in to fix a water leak. Yeah. Remind, this is a 70-year-old man with high blood pressure that's on medication for his blood pressure. And he has not eaten any food. He's 70 years old. And this is our timeline so far. Okay, go ahead.
You know, and I guess when, you know, when she got a hold of Robin, he said his truck was there, you know, and you know, they thought they heard something out in the sawmill. And, well, I guess around, you know, when they went to investigate, you know, when they went to check up on that, they didn't find him. So Robin, I guess it was, called in 911 to report him missing.
And what time was 911 called?
I believe it was around 8:30.
And who called 911?
Robin, the worker from the scale house, is what, you know, that's what we were informed.
So Robin, the worker, calls 911.
Yes.
Now here's the kicker. What time does little Miss Wendy get done shopping and come back out to the sawmill? Because her beloved husband's missing?
We were told that she got there around 12:15.
12:15. Miss Wendy is done shopping and shows up to the sawmill. Now, everybody go in the chat room and see what's wrong with this picture. And you're just going to notice the end of it, but I want to go back up top there. How many people knew that she was, that Ken was at the sawmill that night?
That was working, we figured Arthur, who called him in, Robin, the guy in the scale house who gave him his paycheck, Bud, who was there with him, you know, when he got his paycheck, and Wendy.
Okay, so we have Arthur, we have Bud, we have Robin, Wendy. Right?
Yep.
Four people knew that he was at work. And this was not a day that he was regularly scheduled for work, because he had not been going into work, has he? Because they've been very slow at the sawmill, correct?
Yeah. Yep.
So it was a really big surprise that he'd be coming into work. I mean, he's like probably happy to get called into work to get some money.
Yeah.
So Wendy knew he was going into work that day. Now let's go back. And what was he in the process of doing before he went missing? One of the questions I asked you when we talked is, was there anyone that would want to hurt your father? Was there anyone upset with your father? And what was it that you told me?
He was in the process of getting custody of his granddaughter, which is Wendy's granddaughter, we were informed that Lily's, that's his granddaughter, Lily, that her father's family, was not very happy about it.
I need to back up a little bit. People are asking, where did she go shopping and what was it for?
She went to Once Upon a Child. I guess that's a kids' store, and she was went to Walmart. She was going to get a case for a new phone.
Yeah, or that new case for a new phone. And she was gone from 7 a.m. until, let's see, she went, well, she said she went back home. Oh, she dropped Lily off at 8 a.m. And
yeah, she Lily was dropped off.
Okay, Miss,
we'll get
on that, okay? Anyway, so he was trying to get custody of Wendy's granddaughter, which is not his blood granddaughter.
Correct.
And the reason he was trying to get custody of her was why?
She, you know, with the you know, with Tiffany and you know, the baby's dad were mixed up in drugs and, you know, not very good parents, I guess you could say. You know, they were, you know, not the kind of environment, you know, he wanted to, you know, the little girl to grow up in.
Right, and he loved Lily, huh?
Yes.
Lily spent a lot of time with them, didn't she?
Yeah. Yeah.
So he accepted her as if she was his own little granddaughter.
Yep.
So it sometimes you don't have to be blood in order to love a child and want them to be safe. And so after Lily was adopted, or was she, he got custody, he was getting ready to go to court on what day in order to finalize this?
It was going to be September 24th was going to be the next court date. So, and that was, you know, when he was supposed to get a certificate of placement, I guess. You know, it was going to be finalized. So.
And how did the family feel about this? I mean, was her mom mad, or was the dad mad, or how did they feel about Ken? According to your dad.
According, you know, as far as I know, you know, the grandparents and stuff on the, you know, on the father's side were upset about this, and you know, and stuff. So.
And when you say upset, what happened in the courtroom?
He was threatened.
Was his life threatened?
Yeah. Yeah.
How? What was said to him?
I don't know exactly what was said, but I know they you know, he was, they said his life was, he was, he, you know, the whole family basically was threatened in, you know, in the courthouse. You know, the, you know, his,
And we're talking about the father, the biological father of Lily. It was her, the father's parents threatened your father.
Yeah, yeah. The grandfather on the other side.
Okay, the grandfather did. Okay. And what about Lily's biological father? How did he feel about your father getting custody of his daughter?
I you know, it's some of the stuff that I read and everything, you know, it seemed like he was pretty upset about it, you know, but. Yeah,
and tell me about your stepsister. How did she feel about her daughter, or your dad getting custody of her own stepfather getting custody of Lily?
You know, they said that she basically signed off right away, you know, releasing her.
So she wanted Kim to have custody of her daughter.
Yeah, you know.
Okay, so that was a mutual thing. That was a good thing.
Yeah.
And what was planned after he received custody of Lily? What was the plans between him and Wendy?
They were going to be getting divorced.
And why were they waiting until after he got custody?
Well, if they would have got divorced before, you know, with it not being his blood granddaughter, they, you know, there wouldn't have been a, he wouldn't have been able to get custody of her.
Right. So they were just going to, and that was the only thing keeping them together as a couple, was just the fact that he was trying to get custody of Lily. So why didn't Wendy come in and run in and save her grandchild from the drugs and alcohol and the abuse? Why didn't she save her own granddaughter? Why did Ken have to come in and do this?
I don't know. You know, I mean, it was, I know that's the kind of person that he was. You know, if, you know, he...
Well, I just know if I'm a grandmother and someone's abusing one of my granddaughters, step out my way. I'm coming in to get my babies. And I'm just wondering why. I mean, if I was married to someone, I mean, that man's not going to have to come take my babies and protect them. I would be on top of that one right away. They're not going to come take my babies away from me. Or, you know, I'm going to protect my grandchildren. I'm going to make sure nobody's abusing my grandchildren.
Yeah.
So why didn't Wendy step up to the plate?
You know, I mean,
or Lily.
You know, I was told that, you know, once he, after that, you know, they were divorced, that, you know, he was going to have, you know, he was getting custody of
Lily.
Of Lily. So.
And where did he meet? And one of the things that really interested me after the show the other night, it's been a couple months. How old is your father?
He's 70.
And how old is Wendy?
45, 46. Something like that.
How did they meet?
Online.
So was it like through a dating service or something like that, or?
I don't know exactly.
Did he live up in Pennsylvania with you when you met her? Or?
Yeah. Yep. He lived up here, you know, at the time. That's what took him from here, you know, to go down.
Do you believe that they were really truly in love, or how? Explain the relationship through your eyes.
When he. You know, first moved down there and everything, he was happy, great, you know. I mean,
and I'm not saying age makes a big difference. I'm not saying that at all. I just want to make sure that, you know, I want people to see the dynamic of everything here. And so he seemed really happy with her, and he seemed in love, and they did a lot of stuff together, and I've seen him, and on her page, she had pictures that says Ken's princess, and, you know, they seemed to be very in love. That's why I was very confused as to why they were getting a divorce. I mean, especially with him being 70 years old, why all of a sudden would he want a divorce? What was going on that was so tragic that the man did not want to be together with her anymore?
You know, I mean,
that was actually a question for you, Kenny.
What's that?
I said that was a question for you. What was going on that, with him being 70 years old and them being married, they seemed so happy, and then all of a sudden he wants a divorce. What was so bad that he wanted a divorce?
Actually, she wanted the divorce, you know, is what we were told. You know, she was out running around, you know, partying and not I guess like
she didn't want to be in marriage anymore. Okay. Now I wanted to go back up through this timeline again. She shows up at 10:15. I have some questions. We're going to answer the questions really quick out of the chat room. one of the questions is, do they have the security tape from Walmart from that day where she claims to go into Walmart?
Not. I ask them about that, and as far as I know, they
go tell them to get it.
till we really actually got around to it. I don't think they had the, you know, the tapes. I don't know 100%.
Yeah, they need to go out and get that. And then if that Once Upon a Child was in a strip mall or something, go around and get those security tapes, and then they can verify whether she was there and what times. So to verify her story. Okay, so let's go back. 5:50, he calls Wendy to see how dinner was, see how Lily was. 7:30, this is crucial right here. 7:30, the repairs are done. He calls home. So he's already called her at 5:50, and then at 7:30, he's calling home again. This man calls home a lot of times to talk to her, right?
Yeah.
And she knows exactly what's going on out of his job. That's what I'm getting at 5:50. How's dinner going? How's Lily? Checking in at home. He's probably starving. He's wondering how that dinner's going. He's probably hungry. 7:30. Repairs are done. I'm going to be home in an hour. So that means he's going to be home at 8:30, right?
Yeah.
8:05, he calls Arthur and he says, hey, leak fixed. I'm done. Which probably means he was heading to get fixing. I'm leaving, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and that would have put him, you know, if he called in at, called him at 8:05, you know, if he was pretty much basically done, I mean, that would have put him, you know.
But Wendy, and so, you know, Robin's gone,
yeah,
Bud's gone from the job, so those two are already gone. They left around 4:30. And at that point, Arthur thinks he's gone too, so we knocked three people out of the equation at that point, correct?
Yep.
The only person that thinks he's going to be there, because he called Wendy and says, I'll be home in about an hour. Because at 8:05, he calls Arthur and he says, I'm done. Done with the job. The only person that knows he's there at that point is who? Who knows he's there at that point?
Wendy. You know. And...
so she's the only one that knows he's there. Okay. When I questioned her on the show the last time, she goes, but I was home in bed. No, because if she was, she texted him again at 9 o'clock. So she wasn't in bed. He didn't answer the phone. And then she waited another hour till 10:15, 10:30. She said she was home asleep in bed. But if she texted him at 9 and then another hour and 15, 10:15 to 10:30, that's even another hour. She may have been in bed, but she was wide awake. Because that's what she said on my last show, was that she was home in bed asleep. She said that right on my show, correct? I want people to go back and listen to the last taping. She said she was in bed asleep. He doesn't show up. The woman goes to bed asleep with a 70-year-old man out there that has not had dinner. She only lives 10 minutes from the plant. She's the only one that stays there. The man ends up abducted from his job, and she's the only one that knows he's there. She claims that she's in bed asleep at home, but she texts him at 9 o'clock, and then she texts him again at 10 between 10:15 and 10:30, and then claims to go to bed. The next day, she gets up at 7 o'clock. She texts him again. Why not just drive out to her job since her man has not come home to see how he's doing? Because, and let me say another thing. During our show, she was talking about how loving and caring and how wonderful their relationship was. I had to call her out on the plate. I had to ask her if they were heading for a divorce. Did I not?
Yeah.
Didn't I, Kenny? And what did she seemed very shocked that I knew that information. She was stunned.
You know,
to say the least. She was very stunned that I knew that. So she at 7 o'clock in the morning, Wendy got up, texted him again, no answer. So she takes Lily to drop her off at daycare and drops her. So she drops her off at the daycare. I guess at school. She considered it school. She states that she goes home. Now, in her voice, 1 minute she's crying, and then the next minute she's back to normal. And people said that you were so brash with her, Rachel, but if she was truly crying, I would have felt sorry for the lady. But 1 minute she's, 1 second she's crying, the next minute she has her voice back and she's upset, or she's normal again. So to me, you know, it didn't really seem like she was really upset. I was just trying to get the facts out about this case. So, I have heard of Shoppa therapy before. I mean, I've gone shopping and done Shoppa therapy. But there's no answer on his phone at 7 o'clock. So she stated that she called out there, and they said, yeah, we see his vehicle. So she just takes off and goes shopping. Well, at that point, to me, that's not somebody else's responsibility to check the welfare of my husband. It's my responsibility. I'm going to go out and check on him. And she just calls out there, and they said, yeah. According to her, she says that they saw his vehicle and stated to her that he was fine. But obviously they were concerned about something, because at 8:30, Robin's out there looking around for him. Now, what gets me, if you look at her character, if we go back up through the timeline between 5:50 and 5:30 or 7:30, this man's calling her off the hook, giving her details or asking how's Lily, how's dinner, repairs are done. He's giving her minute by minute what's going on. And when she, and then I'll, and I will be home in an hour. And then all of a sudden she's not hearing from him. Wouldn't that be a red flag to go check on my husband? When all of a sudden communication drops? Wouldn't that stir up something inside of somebody? When all of a sudden they're not hearing from their husband? When he's the type, according to earlier, he's the type to call her every, I mean, he called her before the hour was up twice. And he called her during that day, asking her about the crock pot. This is a man of detail. This is a man of organization. This is a man that had been in the military. He cared about this woman. He cared about Lily. He wanted to adopt Lily. He cared about everything about this woman. He moved down to North Carolina to take care of Lily. Or to take care of her and move in with her. And marry her, correct? Now tell me about your dad, Ken. Kenny?
Yeah.
Was your dad a man of organization and detail? Did he keep on to his time schedule?
Yeah. You know, I mean, he was, you know, everybody that, you know, that knows him and even though we were up here, you know, and everybody we talked to down there that's been around him for the last 11 years, you know, been around him daily all the time, you know, and that's exactly what, you know, if he said he was going to be there, he was there on time or early. You know, he wasn't one to be late, and, you know, and that's, I mean, everybody that you talk to down there, he took...
Hence being a supervisor on top of that, right? He was the maintenance supervisor. So being a supervisor as a maintenance man, he was expected to be on time, and he expected his people to be on time. And it looks like if you look up on the timeline, he also called a supervisor and checked in and followed up. You call me in to do a water leak, I fixed the water leak, and it's done. I'm going home.
Yep.
Now, let's go back. When police are called and they show up out there, what do they find?
You know, when they first get out there, basically everything was there. You know, his pickup truck's there. His paycheck's laying on the seat. His personal cell phone's in the truck. his they found his work keys and his work cell phone about 25 feet away from his truck, buried in dirt, covered with dirt, you know, and his glasses, which he can't see nothing without his glasses, were laying on the back of his, in the bed of his truck.
Okay, let's slow down there. So, what time, so his work cell phone and his work keys.
Yeah.
Somebody buried them, right?
Yep.
And what else did they find around that area in the dirt? Signs of what?
The struggle, you know. I mean, if you got, you know, his, they said there was, you know, apparent struggle, you know, going on right there, and you know, and if you're, you know him, you know, he. You know, like I said, he couldn't see without his glasses. So, you know, I mean, how does glasses, you know, get to in the bed of his truck?
Right.
And
which phone? So there was a struggle. There were signs of a struggle in the dirt. Which phone was he using that night to call her and text her on?
His work phone.
So it was his work phone.
Yeah.
And those keys. Those keys were for the building and for the vehicles and all that around there, right?
Yeah.
Where were the keys to his truck at?
They were in his truck. You know, they.
And when he normally showed up to work, did he just leave the keys to his truck within his truck and his regular phone and his paycheck in the truck?
You know, I know he didn't like to have a lot of, he didn't carry a wallet, you know, stuff like that. He didn't have a lot of, like to have a lot of stuff in his pockets, you know.
Did anyone ever find his ID or anything like that?
No. He would always, instead of a wallet, take his bank card and his driver's license and, you know, if he had money, wrap it around, you know, put that with his license and stuff and put it in his front pocket.
So his paycheck is on the front seat of his truck. So nobody was there to rob him. They could have got his check.
Yeah.
And they, no. I mean, he'd been out of work, so obviously he didn't have that much money on him, right?
No.
And he was, it's not like he had time to run to the bank and grab a bunch of money before he went to work because he got called in because there was an emergency. So it's not like he wasn't there to get, I mean, nobody went there to rob him. It's not like he had much anyway. And what's really odd is they could have got his paycheck off the front seat of his truck. And they could have taken his phones or whatever. But no, they left those behind. So anything worth any money, they left behind. They took him.
Yeah. You know,
they abducted him.
Yeah. You know,
and he didn't walk off on his own because he couldn't even see without his glasses. And they were sitting on the back of his truck.
Yeah. You know, and he just recently got new glasses, and that's the one that they were in the back of his truck, and his old glasses, you know, we found them at the house, so it wasn't like he would have had a backup pair, and, oh, okay, I'll let these here and put these on and walk away, you know. And when the sheriffs first got out there, they were calling for weather. So they had their tracking guy went around quick and, you know, did a perimeter, you know, to see if they would have walked off somewhere into the woods around there, or the fields around there, you know, and got hit up alongside the head or whatever and you know, wandered off, you know.
And they found nothing. We're going to have to soup this up a little bit because we're going to run out of time without telling the whole story. But our time has gone so fast. So they went around, they've done the search around the woods and everything. They found nothing with their tracking guy, and they brought dogs in, correct?
Correct.
And what did they find with anything with the dogs?
No, they concentrated, I guess, the only area that they really showed any signs of, you know, anything was right around where his phone and stuff was, and they never let off of that. You know, like he would have walked away and been, you know, like he basically, what they said is, you know, it shows that he would have been put inside a vehicle.
Right, because his scent dropped from there. He would have been put in a vehicle and left, so therefore he would not have, if he had walked somewhere, then the dogs would have been able to track him somewhere. So if he'd been put in a vehicle, the dogs wouldn't have been able to track him, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So then he's taken in a vehicle somewhere, and he disappears. He's abducted. And at that point, he had called Arthur. Arthur couldn't have done anything to him because Arthur was en route to Florida, correct?
Yes.
The only person that knows he's out there is Wendy. Wendy's claiming that she was in bed asleep. But Wendy wasn't in bed asleep. Wendy was texting him at 9 o'clock. Then she texts him between 10 and 15 and 10:30. And little Miss Wendy doesn't decide to show up out there until 12:15 the next day. And she's not even the one that calls 911. Robin calls 911. And she claims that she called out there. And you know, if my husband that hasn't eaten, and, you know, what an honorable man to come in at 70 years old, adopt, how old is Lily?
5.
70 years old. He's already raised you. He's already completed his life. He's tired. He's a U.S. veteran. And he's going to come in and adopt a 5-year-old little baby. People should be on their knees thanking him for this. And honoring him for this. And he becomes abducted. But instead, he's missing. No one knows where he's at. And if they do, they're not talking. And now, this is the first holiday without your dad, isn't it?
Yep. So.
And where's Lily now?
She is with, last we heard, she is with Wendy.
So she did get taken from Wendy initially when this started, correct? Because Wendy said she had a nervous breakdown.
Yeah. And, you know, on the last show, she said that Lily's back with her. So, and, you know, that's...
Now, let's go into that situation. Because this story even gets a little bit weirder, doesn't it? Is that a word, weirder? I'm going to coin it. Okay, so then you get called up to come to North Carolina because your dad's missing. When did you get, and who called you?
Tammy called me, Wendy's sister. She called me and, you know, I back to her.
When did you get called to tell you that your dad was missing? What time?
I got the, I don't know when exactly when they left a message, and message showed up on my phone about 3 o'clock on Friday.
He's missing in North Carolina. You're living in where?
Near Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
So how far of a drive is it to where he lives from where you live?
About 8, you know, you can make it in 8 hours if you keep trucking.
Yeah, and you did, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you got out here, how long did, when did you get, leave there and arrive here?
We arrived, you know, 5:30 on Saturday afternoon.
And you got everything finished there and you just took off and came here, correct? You and Jessica?
Yeah, we weren't really sure. Friday night, we didn't really have, a lot of detail of actually what was going on. So I called him again Saturday morning, to see if, what was going on. Was it, when I talked to him Friday, they didn't really know if he was, walked off, or anything. So, we got back to him Saturday morning, and Saturday morning I headed down.
And at first you're like, okay, you guys say he's missing, but, maybe he got mad and walked off to cool off or something. But then you find out that they find his glasses, and then they find that there could have been a struggle or something. You find out that, and that alarms you. And it starts to sink in that your dad's missing. How did that feel?
My heart just sank, and I just, it's like, it's, somebody wake me up.
And you had to drive all the way here 8 hours thinking probably the worst. And
yeah.
How many people came with you down from Pennsylvania?
At that point, it was me and Jessica.
And then you had other people arrive with you, or come here, right?
Yeah. Yep. Well, once we got down there and, figured out the whole situation of everything that was going on and everything, my best friend from up here, Steve, he came down.
What a great guy. Hi, Steve. Is he listening tonight?
I believe so.
Hey, Steve, I just want to say a shout-out to him. What a great guy. I mean, he just... Now, let me ask you this. When you showed up here, were you welcomed with open arms by Wendy's family?
Yeah.
There's a lot of people around the house, and everybody was, showed that they were concerned.
And everybody pulled together, had to do what they could to help find your dad.
There were some. We went out Saturday once we got, shortly after we got there, discussed what happened a little bit. We still didn't know all the details, but it was like, well, let's go. I sat for eight hours. Let's go do something. And, at 30 minutes after we got there, we headed to the sawmill.
And when you got to the sawmill, what was the scene like? What did you see? What was happening?
Nothing.
Nobody was there?
No. Not, when we got out there, there was basically, okay, where was stuff? And that was...
Was his truck still there?
No, they took that right away on Friday.
Where did they take his truck?
To the sheriff's station to have their crime scene guys go through it.
And did you talk to the detective in charge of the case? Did you find out all that information and go speak to him? Or did he request to speak to you or anything like that?
I spoke with them on... Sunday was the first time that I spoke with the sheriffs.
Was there a request for you to come to the sheriff's department as a group?
Yeah, we went out there first thing Monday morning, as a group to kind of go through the whole thing of catch everybody basically, up on the details and everybody give their thoughts and questions and, everything there. We met with five or six guys from the, from the sheriff's department.
And what did they say that their next action would be in order to find your father? What did they say they were going to do?
They really wanted to try and, follow up on anything that they thought they had. They were basically, at this point,
think they were already looking at, you know, with the abduction as, you know, trying to get into the criminal part of it, you know.
Did they, had they already questioned Wendy about this?
Not at this point, they hadn't, but they brought her down. She didn't go down with us right away, and, you know, they wanted to talk to her, so they
Was she open with him and letting them know that he had been threatened by somebody at that point? Had she talked to them and told them this?
I don't believe she had really spoken too much at all at this point because, you know, she was...
Well, I mean, her husband was missing, and they thought that he had been abducted, and, you know, they were looking at it as a criminal case. Why wasn't her fanning down at that police department saying, hey, you know, I know that this is what's happened, bing, 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 and in the past, and his life was threatened, and, you know, I'm here, I want to find out where my husband is, and, you know, these are the things that I know, and I'm here to help and try and help you get through this. You know, I can tell, what do you need to know about my husband, and I'll do whatever I can to help you guys do this. Why wasn't she down there doing that?
I don't know. You know,
so when you guys went down as a group, did she also come down with you?
No. Nope. She,
and so was he? Did he question why she wasn't there?
They once we got through talking as a group, one of the investigators wanted to talk to her right away. So they.
Was she there to talk to him, or did they have to call her in?
They had to call her in, and you know, her mom brought her down.
And where was she staying at this point?
With her parents, you know.
And I want you to give us a scenario of the property where they live at. Tell us how that's laid out.
You know, my dad and Wendy lived right across the driveway from, you know, from her parents. And Wendy's one sister and her husband, they have another house right down behind, you know, the parents. So, you know, there's...
So it's all on one property then?
Yeah.
And it's only 10 minutes from his job site?
Yeah.
Now... There's another incident that happened that one of his best friends, he went to one of his best friends, and what did he ask him about?
He went to Wendy's dad.
Oh, Wendy's dad, that's right.
Probably, maybe a month before he was abducted and asked if he knew where he could get a gun. That was brought up later, you know,
And so he asked where he can get a gun, and then also, didn't one of your dad's friends state that your dad had come to him and state something that is going on?
We talked to one of his, probably is one of his real good friends down there. And, you know, after we were down there for, you know, the last time, it was probably 3 weeks into it that we got a hold of, you know, his one friend. And, you know, he said that, probably a week before, you know, he went missing that, you know, my dad, he was talking to my dad, and he said that, you know, things weren't, the arguments and everything between him and Wendy were, you know, were getting a lot worse, and you know, she wanted out of the marriage now, you know, is how he put it. So, you know, that's different from the story that we were, you know, given. But, you know, and I mean, so, you know, that was shocking. So.
And And but your dad and Wendy really were, you guys all did not know that their marriage was about to end. You guys didn't know that, right?
No, I didn't know that until Sunday night when we were down there. You know.
And who was the one that told you about it?
Wendy's two sisters came to us and told me.
Mm-hmm. And was it shocking to you to hear that?
Yeah. I hadn't heard nothing about that before, and, you know, my dad never said nothing.
Would your dad have moved to back up to Pennsylvania with you, or what would he have done?
I don't know. I mean,
that must have been a shocker for him at 70 years old to, you know. And Mrs. Burnside's on here, and she's saying, I'm sorry, the investigators still have Ken's computers, and Wendy doesn't get on anymore. But doesn't she live across the drive from Miss Burnside, and she can get on her computer and listen in?
Yeah. I mean, they live right across the driveway. So.
Yeah. I mean, she should be able to get on the radio, or she can call into the show. Ms. Burnside, you can have your daughter call into the show at 323-417-6851. We'd love to ask her a few more questions. And I know that, now since this has happened and her husband's missing, she's changed her phone number, she's changed her email. What if he wanted to call home and say, help me, come get me, or, you know, I need some help? How is he supposed to get a contact her? I mean, this was her husband.
Yeah.
Ken could not even contact Wendy if he wanted to at this point, could he?
Nope.
Because Wendy's gone out and changed her phone number and her email, hasn't she?
So. Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't even have a current phone number for him, so, you know.
And how long after your dad went missing did your stepmom changed her phone number and everything? How long did that take?
Probably 3 weeks.
And I have another question too. Let's you know, after your dad goes missing, you guys go down there for the initial search. Then, we started looking at this, and it was how long she had a car that he had bought for them. And you said it was mostly for her because he has his truck. How long did it take? Well, wait, let's go back to that in a minute. The next day, which was that Sunday, she asked about his life insurance policies, or she was asking to look around for a life insurance policy, correct?
That was Saturday night.
Saturday night. And can you tell us about that?
We were just back from searching, and, you know, we were sitting in the living room at her parents' house, and, you know, she's, you know, just said that, you know, she don't want to think negative, but, you know, do I think that she should call work and see if he has, you know, see if he has life insurance, you know, and this is...
Ms. Burnside, I will remove you from the chat room if you continue to harass or say things cruel to any of the family members of a missing man. So if you continue to harass anyone in this group, I'll just remove you. Thank you. Go ahead, Matt, sir. So he started looking, or she started questioning about a life insurance policy that Saturday night. He went missing on a Friday, correct, or Thursday?
Thursday night.
So 2 days, not even 2 days later, she's already looking for his life insurance policy when he could have been out there in a ditch with maybe a broken ankle or whatever, and she's already looking for that. And what about a necklace? What happened with a necklace?
I guess it was
Sunday when we were getting ready to go out searching, she took a necklace. Wendy took a necklace that my dad gave her and gave it to Jessica. You know, and said she wanted her to have it.
Yeah. And so she gave it to her when, that Saturday night?
Sunday, when we were getting ready to go out searching.
So Sunday, she gives the necklace that your dad had given to her to Jessica, your wife.
Yeah.
So she's starting to give away things. Now, one of the questions I asked you when you and I were on the phone one day, I asked you what is going on with your dad's belongings in the house. What is she doing with the house? And you said that she won't even go into that house at that point. Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, basically, you know, when we were down there, you know, she stayed over, you know, at, you know, with her mom and dad, you know, and everybody over at the house. She would pretty much, you know, I'd go in and take a shower and, you know, and come back out. You know, she took my aunt in when she was down and showed her around the house. And before we left the first time, after we were there for 2 weeks, she took me in and showed me around the house. You know, but,
and there were some pretty peculiar things in that house that you saw, but we're not going to discuss them on the air tonight at all. So we'll just leave that one alone. But what was your feeling towards things? Did you think it was kind of odd that she didn't stay in that house?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was, you know, I mean, you know, to me it's, but, you know, I don't, you know, really know, you know, it just.
But, you know, and we can't judge that, and I don't want to judge her because, you know, when someone you love goes missing, then, you know, you want to be close to the other people that you love so far as to come to comfort and support, and we want to say that to you. I want to be very careful about that. But, you know, there are things that I'm glad that you were able to see the house. I'm really glad. Now, another thing that's happened, let's go into the car, the vehicle. Explain the vehicle to us. What happened with the vehicle? Because she explained that on the last show.
It was maybe two and a half or 3 weeks after, you know, he went missing. It was financed, you know, and everything. So she didn't want to pay all that premium. So in order to cancel the insurance, she had to turn the license plate in.
And she did that 10 days after he went missing. Not even that. Where was it? 7 days?
It was probably 2 weeks. You know, maybe.
Oh, okay, because I thought it was 10 days that that happened.
So.
But it was shortly. It was shortly. So she, but she stopped making payments on the vehicle. She pulled the tags off the vehicle or the plates, correct?
Yeah.
And she turned them into the DMV?
Yeah, it was, you know, and then in order to, you know, I guess down, you know, to cancel the insurance, you got to hand in the license plate so you're not driving around without insurance.
Now, the interesting part that she also stated was that this vehicle was a rental vehicle. She was on the show and she said it was a rental vehicle. Right?
Yeah.
And that's something you and I discussed. I've never seen a rental vehicle that you pull the plates on. In fact, you can go to jail for pulling plates on a rental vehicle because a rental vehicle, when you have a rental vehicle, the plates and the vehicle belong to the rental company and you pay the rent. So, you know, like when you have, if you go to the airport and you rent a vehicle, you don't ever pull their plates off their vehicle, you know, and you don't pay insurance through your own insurance company. Well, you can, but you pay an insurance fee to them. This actually was a vehicle that your dad was buying, correct?
Yes.
And how do we know that your dad was buying this vehicle?
Because, you know, people from the lady from the finance company contacted me wanting to get a message to him, you know, about his payments. You know, and that was October 4th that, you know, that the lady contacted me. And, you know.
Was it possibly a lease?
No.
No, okay. Because they were making a payment on it.
Yes.
He was
making payments and, you know, financing the vehicle. And I've talked to the people at the finance company. And
how did they get your number?
I was listed as his contact, you know, personal contact on the paperwork.
So how come Wendy wasn't listed as his contact number?
I don't know.
I'm asking a lot of interesting questions tonight, aren't I? you might want to write some of this stuff down I've been asking you, because, I mean, we're really coming up with some stuff that you might want to check into. Another thing, too, is they called you, and on the last show, Wendy had stated that she called them immediately and stated that he was missing and that she could not pay the payments and she wanted to turn it back in, but she, in fact, had not called them, or she said that she called them and then she got put on hold or whatever. She'd make some excuses, but she said that she couldn't get with the person that she was supposed to be in touch with. But these people went out of their way and found you and called you and said, "Hey, look, there's been no payments or anything," right?
Yeah.
And why does this strike us as odd that all of a sudden she wants this vehicle out of the yard, and she wanted that car gone? Did she not?
So, yeah, I mean, you know, she said on the thing, which I didn't know, that she, you know, she said she called him and told him to come and get it.
Oh, Ken, we've got 3 minutes left of our show. So, one thing I got to say, and I'm trying to get you through this, there's many things that have led up to this. Law enforcement's still working some pretty heavy leads. If anybody has any tips or anything that they can call in, where can they call in the tips to?
You know, they can call the Catawba County Sheriff's Office, 828-464-5241, or, you know, if you go on the Catawba County Sheriff's Department, they have an anonymous tip line, you know, if you don't want to talk to somebody. You know, you can give your tip anonymously. They have a link, give a tip link right there on the, you know, on their website, or, you know, call the number. And, you know, just, you know, we have on Friday up the reward to $5,000, from two. And, you know, we,
and they also, he also has a page on Facebook for Missing Kenny, right? You have a page. Can you say that real quick where it is?
It's Help Find Ken Moeller, Missing Newton, North Carolina.
Okay, and just put that in the search and you guys will find it. Please join it.
Yeah, it has all the news articles and everything on it also.
Yes, lots of news. Actually, there's a video on there. Go watch Wendy on the video. We've got 90 seconds left. If you can say something to your dad for the holiday, what would you say, hon?
You know, Merry Christmas. We love you. Please, you know, come home.
If you could talk to the person that's done this, what would you say to her or him?
Just, you know, just come forward. You know, you're, you know, just prolonging it because, you know, everybody knows that, you know, the truth is going to come out, and and you know, you're not doing yourself no good. It's going to weigh there until, you know, your final days. So just come forward.
And you owe this to this family. You, if you've done something, you owe this to this family. And it's not going to get any better. It's going to eat you alive by knowing and waking up every night knowing what you've done to another human being. Let Kenny and Ken live in peace. Give him his father back. You owe him that much after what you've done. Give him his father back. With that being said, we'll see you next Wednesday night. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Hug your family. Kenny, thank you. And a big hello to Jessica. And you all have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas as best you can. Thank you, everyone, for being on tonight. Good night, everyone. Yeah.